Today we're talking about writing and gratitude. Get ready to meet Busy Coy and Teresa Tulipano. It's time for Travels with Triggs.
Travels with Travels with Travels with Triggs. Who's he gonna talk to now? What's he gonna talk about? Where we gonna go? Travels with Triggs.
Our guests today are Yarn Slingers. The group was founded in 2011 by Ramona Jan. Today, I wanted to explore the theme of gratitude within writing. What are your first thoughts when we talk about that?
Can I just say that I'm grateful for being around other writers? I think I get so much inspiration from things like Yarn Slingers, from getting to meet other writers, from talking about the craft, from taking classes together. It is food for my creative soul. And it's the thing I'm most grateful for, is to be a part of a community of writers.
Wow. Couldn't agree more, Teresa. And grateful that we live in such a strange pocket that has such a density of writers and visual artists and makers of all kinds. It really is sort of a miracle when you think about it, all of the human resource that we have around us in terms of writers. I'm also grateful for the process of writing in a weird way. I guess I'm grateful for the little challenges that it presents that I have to learn to overcome, the little triumphs and the struggles, and the practice of sitting down and trying to figure out what I think and feel, and having a tool to do that, which is pencil and paper or my laptop, or sometimes I use voice dictation when I'm writing, and trying to figure out, you know, the busy experience. I'm really grateful I have writing as a tool to do that.
I remember my poor mother having to make carbon copies and hit those keys so hard because it had to get through. And with cut and paste and computers and word processing and the fact that we can do our research on the internet, writing is more accessible than ever for exploration. Teresa, any thoughts on that?
You know, I go back and forth because recently, I've been thinking a lot about this. I mentor some student writers, and sometimes they use the internet instead of writing. And I give a lot of thought to the tool that it can be and how it should be used versus what I see some of the students doing, which is just cutting and pasting straight from Wikipedia when they are supposed to be researching something. So I was thinking about how important it was when I was in high school, which was the 80s. I'm happy to age myself or date myself, but we had to cite everything, every reference. We had to really be meticulous in the way that we presented our writing to be sure that there was not even a shadow of a hint that we might have plagiarized something. And now, you know, I'm working with these high school students, and occasionally someone will be like, did I cut and paste too much? You know, and it's like, well, yes, you did. And also, you didn't cite any of your sources. So everyone thinks that you wrote that, my friend. So I think about it a little differently. I think about it as it has taken out this important part of writing, which for me was the research, the actual shoe leather reporting, you know, going and knocking on someone's door and talking to them. Not that the internet is not a great tool, but the existing tools before the internet are still around. And I actually think there's quite a bit of value to using them and writing in that way as well.
Well, the internet is a tool. It's not the final product, right?
Sure. Yeah.
Yeah. And I think also if you're asking yourself, am I cutting and pasting too much? You're probably cutting and pasting too much.
Yes, the answer is always yes, if that is your question.
When you're writing for a group like Yarn Slingers, which tells personal-based stories based on your own experience, how does that change your writing?
It changes my writing a lot because I don't consider myself a personal essayist or a memoirist, really. most of my writing is humor-based, fictional. And so Yarn Slingers for me represents an opportunity to kind of go outside of my comfort zone and to explore personal stories that I really otherwise I don't think would feel the drive to write on my own. But when I get an email from the head of Yarn Slingers, Greg Triggs, that says, hey, there's a Yarn Slingers event coming up and this is the theme, all of a sudden my brain starts whirring and I go, oh, that might be an interest. I never thought of that. What could that theme have to do with me and my experiences and my memories? And so I really treasure the Yarn Slingers experience because it takes me out of my day-to-day writing. And I'm very pleased with a lot of the pieces I've written for Yarn Slingers. Not all of them. They're not all winners. But some of the pieces I've written have been very personal and I've been very proud of. And I think, wow, I never would have written that down, let alone maybe remembered that experience in a deep way, unless Yarn Slingers had prompted me to do so.
I just want to say they're all winners. All of your stories are winners, Busy. That's
Thanks.
A giant lie to say that's not true. I would say for me, Yarn Slingers also is a great opportunity. Often the prompt is something I wouldn't have written about, or I love it when I have written about it and I have a reason to go at it in from a new direction or write something else. I like not writing the first thing that I think of. I like, instead of A or B, I like to go to D, E, F ideas. I like to throw away stuff that seems too easy to write to the theme that you assign, Greg. And I was curious, actually, do you have this long list going, Greg, of themes that you're going to spring on us throughout the year?
I do. I keep a journal of ideas that I'm constantly honing. I'll be driving somewhere or I'll hear something on the radio or someone will say something and I'll think, Eureka, that's a new theme. I love themes that can go in a million different directions because one of my great joys watching Yarn Slingers is being surprised at where the theme takes the writer. The other thing about the themes that's interesting to me is very often people will write back and say, I'm available, but I don't have anything to say on this topic. I am such, or at least when I started with Yarn Slingers, I was such a pleaser that, you know, the theme could have been romance novels of the 1300s, and I would have figured out a way to write something. So we're all growing together.
That's the fun of it. And the challenge, though, is like Teresa's saying, what do I have to say about this topic? And then to realize you don't only have maybe an A story or a B story, but a C, a D, an E, and an F. And the deeper you mine, the more there is to uncover, which is the exciting thing about the themes and why I love that Yarn Slingers isn't just bring any old story, but it's challenge yourself to find a story. Which I love.
I think one of the reasons the country is so tense right now is that a lot of people have trapped emotions, trauma, ideas, things they have not been processing because so much of it is automated now. And at the beginning of a Yarn Slinger's evolution, I usually find that they are processing some kind of trapped moment or some unprocessed feeling when they first start writing with us, and that it moves on from where they started to a more open, thoughtful place.
I've certainly cried during mine, and I've cried at other people's stories in Yarn Slingers. They're not always tearjerkers, but it definitely happens. And one of the things I was going to say, in addition to the theme, I love the strict word count. And I love that we don't share our stories ahead of the show. I love the wild card nature of any whack job story being told. No, I'm joking. I mean, we don't have whack job storytellers, but I'm saying you just have no idea what is going to come out of anyone's mouth. And it's often so surprising. I love finding out something about someone who I would never have suspected the richness of their life. You know, sometimes we'll get stories about what seems like lifetimes ago for one of the storytellers, that it's really unfathomable that this is the same person as the story that they're telling. And yet they're all true, you know?
The ghosts of Thanksgiving's past. 1969. My parents' kitchen, half a mile from the railroad track, is holiday humid from boiling potatoes. The turkey is roasting in the enameled Nesco oven. My grandpa's pies are tempting us from the chipped Formica counter. Mom bundles me up in my new coat. Just before my eldest brother Art and I walk out the side door, she says, "Wait, my mom made something for you boys." She hands us two knit caps. The grown-up sized one for Art is shaped like a roasted turkey with drumsticks popping out from his temples. Mine has a cascade of knit turkey feathers fanning down the back. As an adult, I will wear them with my beautiful niece and nephew. We climb into Art's Chevy Impala to pick up all the widows and spinsters, a word which we have yet to learn is diminishing to women choosing not to marry. We head to the home of Great Aunt Louise. She's buried three husbands so far, one of whom was named Bunny. Why was a grown man named Bunny? How I wish I'd asked. We listen to Alice's Restaurant on WHAM AM 970. I sing along with the chorus. We collect Aunt Louise well before the song is over. She sings along in her sharp church lady soprano. When the song ends, she puts her hand on Art's 21-year-old shoulder and says, "What a foolish war." "By the way, boys," she adds, "I love your hats. I'd recognize your Grandma Emma's needlework anywhere." Holding up her own gnarled, arthritic hands, Aunt Louise, whom I adore, looks a little wistful. Oh well, still so much to be thankful for. Happy Thanksgiving! When we get home, both grandmas are helping Mom cook. My Grandma Triggs, tiny, bird-like, well-dressed in a matronly, dotty British way, her Mother's Day birthstone wreath brooch always over her heart. Thick glasses exaggerate her expressive eyes. How I'll miss her when she passes away in 8 years. She met my grandpa when she was a dance hall singer in London during the First World War, back when it was the only World War. As I understand it from others, she would never have told me herself. She was also a model. I have a beautiful photo of her wrapped in furs, which was sold as a postcard all over England. Soldiers carried my grandma into foxholes to remember why they were fighting. My grandparents emigrated to America after my dad was born. In total, they had 6 boys. Her fourth son, Gregory, for whom I am named, is the first soldier from Wisconsin to be killed in Korea. His young body will never be recovered. My grandma spends the rest of her life attending funerals of fallen soldiers to see for herself that the other bodies came home. She prays for them weekly, clutching her well-worn rosary. When my grandfather passes away 4 years and 5 months from now, Phyllis Triggs will be sad in a way that won't die until she does. She'll wear my grandpa's robe to bed. She'll cry each time his name is mentioned, so much so that for a while, we will stop talking about him. When she realizes what we're doing, she will say, "Please, don't do that. I don't want the world to forget my Billy." Afterward, her heart will be lighter, glad to hear him remembered by someone other than herself. She will suffer a stroke while attending church. Her last words will be to a priest administering last rites. "Don't worry about me, Father. I'm going to be just fine." At her funeral, my two great aunts, sisters Alma Rita and Mary Rita, will play their guitars. My youngest brother Butch will accidentally say, "Pray their guitars." The sisters will say it that way for the rest of their lives. Service families will be standing at the back of a packed church. I will be a pallbearer, For weeks afterwards, I'll wonder if I did a good enough job for her body to have been laid to rest perfectly as she deserved. That is all years from now. Today, she's annoyed because Grandpa is at his bakery making sure people can get their last-minute orders. I said, Billy, how many family holidays are you going to miss? Aunt Louise, three times a widow, solemnly nods. And we'll be right back with more Travels with Triggs.
Travels with Travels with Travels with Triggs.
Hey there, I'm Jason Dole, letting you know that Radio Catskill's big annual music sale is happening right now and going till 3 at the Liberty Mall. We've got tons of vinyl records, CDs, cassettes, cheap discs to buy in bulk, pricey platters for discerning collectors, plus turntables, stereos, instruments, and more. Stop by and say hi at my kitschy Christmas corner, and do not miss old school sessions, DJing live, big music sale going till 3 at the Liberty Mall in Liberty.
On this week's Wait, Wait!, Superman director James Gunn talks about his early work in film.
Then I had another one in which it was a zombie movie in which one of my brothers became a zombie and ate the other one. And then I had another one where one brother killed another brother. There's a theme.
I'm Peter Sagal. Join us for more tips on handling sibling rivalry on this week's Wait, Wait! Don't Tell Me from NPR.
Wait, Wait! Don't Tell Me, Sunday morning at 10 on Radio Catskill.
We thought we'd share a few stories to give you a taste of yarn slingers, Teresa.
In my 20s, I was the assistant manager at a store in San Francisco that bought and sold clothing. It was in Polk Gulch, near the part of the Tenderloin where I lived. This was the mid-90s, during the first dot-com boom, and most of the employees could only afford to live in a two-bedroom apartment with 5 roommates, or else they lived in a residential hotel and had to carry their toilet paper down the hallway to the communal bathroom. I was lucky. I had inherited a studio apartment from my best friend that only cost $550 a month when most apartments were going for upwards of $3,000. Okay, so I got mugged 13 times in 5 years. But being able to live on my own was worth the self-defense classes I started taking at the Central YMCA. They taught us, if a man was attacking us, to yell, "I don't know him! I don't know him!" Otherwise, no one would intervene because they'd assume it was a domestic violence situation, and nobody wanted to get into the middle of that. We were all so poor that we were always hungry at work. The store manager would buy 2 big bars of dark chocolate to share, like a bribe to keep us docile about our low pay, and we'd survive on little more than that some days. I lived a block from the Mitchell Brothers Theater, where men went to see sex shows. The Tunisian guys at the deli across the street would put a whole avocado on my tomato sandwich every morning, and I'd carefully save half for later. I told them that I was briefly in Tunisia when I was a little girl, and they always asked me to marry them. When I wasn't working at the used clothing store, I was running a literary reading series upstairs at the Edinburgh Castle pub next door to my apartment building. I was also managing a 9-piece funk band, as well as their record label, and I was performing in a weekly drag show at the Stud on Tuesdays at midnight to keep the bridge and tunnel crowd away. In other words, I was living my best life, except for getting mugged so often, except for having to step over the inert bodies of junkies in front of my building, except for running into a sex worker on my block who I had known years before when we were both telemarketers at a roofing company, except for starving most of the week, I was the happiest I'd ever been. On Sundays, I would manage the clothing store on my own, and the Sunday crew loved my management style. I could make my voice boom from years of being a theater kid, and I would yell impossibly loudly, "What's today, everybody?" And we'd all scream, "Heavy Metal Sunday!" And then I'd crank the volume all the way up and blare Led Zeppelin or Black Sabbath to try to drive the customers out of the store.
You need cooler, baby, I'm not fooling.
I orchestrated dance breaks in the windows next to our shop-worn mannequins. And after work Sunday nights, I would take the crew to get fish and chips at the Edinburgh Castle, which I would charge on my emergency credit card. For some of them, it was their only real meal of the week. At night, I'd lean out of the window of my third floor apartment to smoke cigarettes. And when I saw cop cars shining floodlights looking for trans sex workers to bust, I'd yell, "Sit!" which was the lookout code for girls to hide themselves by squatting in their 6-inch heels against the wheel wells of parked cars until the patrol car slowly passed. One night, when I was getting mugged walking home from work, I yelled, "I don't know him, I don't know him," as we did a tug of war on the strap of my vintage purse. In self-defense class, they taught us to let the robber take our bags, but mine held my last $7, my passport, and my tube of Chanel lipstick in the color Vamp, and I could not part with any of it. When the trans sex workers arrived, one took off her shoe and hit the mugger in the face with the spiked heel, then chased him down the block in a lopsided run that sounded like a half-shoed horse, while her friends stood over me in short, shimmering skirts, asking if I was okay, like a host of 6-foot angels. I was dazed as they walked me to my building, and I might not have believed it really happened if not for the trail of sequins and feathers that littered the ground on my way to the deli the next morning.
That was wonderful. Thank you, Teresa. And now we'll go into your story, Busy.
Between Eagles. I walk my dog, Henry, on the path near the Delaware River. The water changes from day to day, sometimes bumping politely against the sides of rocks, other times flooding over them like thick, clear glaze. The trees ride the rainbow, from buds of reddish pink to leaves of green, yellow, and orange. Ferns wave hello and goodbye like the tails of deer. A groundhog waddles the length of a fallen log. Baby frogs, bluebirds, a cloud of midges lit by the sun, there is always something at which to marvel. I spot a bald eagle in a tree across the river, its white head an exclamation point against the mottled brown branches. I freeze. I stare. My heart sends up something like a prayer, a wave of thanks to the universe for putting me on this path. Not just the literal path beside the river, but the path of my entire life, with its many twists and turns, bringing me to this moment to encounter this beauty. Over time, I spot more eagles. I can't help but compare them, keeping score almost. A close-up eagle is exhilarating. A faraway eagle is frustrating. A short encounter is bad. A longer encounter is good. Two eagles are definitely preferable to one eagle. A flying eagle is better than a stationary eagle, and an eagle that flaps right over my head is the best. Mature eagles with their crisp, snowy heads rank higher than the juveniles with their patchy coloring. Every sighting gives me a hit of excitement, but it is always short-lived. Over time, it grows shallower and shallower, pulling away like the edge of the river during the drought. One day, I don't see any eagles at all. I feel disappointed. Another day, another walk, and no eagle. Many days go by without any eagles. I know the eagles are nearby. I've spotted them far in the distance while driving through other towns. More eagles than usual, in fact. They are migrating south from Canada for the winter. But why not right here, right now? I say to myself, like a tantrum, where is my eagle? My walk is not so fun anymore. What point is there in walking if there is no eagle? My dog, Henry, doesn't seem to care. He is as fascinated as ever with our same little path. He noses from one tree to the next, sniffing weeds and stumps, his white tail flicking like a happy flag. We barely make any forward progress. He is so consumed with every square inch of ground, every stalk of grass, every lump of moss. He is fully absorbed with what is right in front of him. I am so focused on the lack of something, I'm missing out on everything. At the end of the path, we turn around. I try to walk the way back as though it is my first time, to pay attention to all that I have ignored. The dark steel blue of the November river, dead leaves scattered like copper curls on a barbershop floor, tall plants shaking their rusty heads in the breeze, the naked trunk of a smooth white sycamore, its branches split into endless forks like lightning. A bounty of gifts all around me. I realize the eagle is a trap. It's easy to be grateful for an eagle. But real gratitude is what happens between eagles. When I stop anticipating, expecting, demanding to be delighted, I wonder, what if I enjoy what is instead of ruining what isn't? Instead of looking for something, what if I just look?
This year, I am grateful for the company I keep. And you can see Teresa, Busy, and myself in the next Yarn Slingers on Sunday, December 7th at 1 p.m. at the Blue Fox in Narrowsburg, New York. It's our holiday show, and the theme will be Secret Santa. Thanks for joining us for Travels with Triggs.
Travels with Travels with Travels with Triggs. Who's he gonna talk to now? What's he gonna talk about? Where we gonna Travels with Triggs.
Sullivan County's social host law, Jared's Law, makes it illegal for anyone 18 or older to provide alcohol or cannabis to minors. Named for a local teen killed in a drunk driving accident, Jared's Law ensures that adults are held accountable, with penalties including fines and even jail time. Parents and guardians are still the number one deterrent to underage substance use, and Jared's Law helps keep our kids safe. Paid for by Catholic Charities.
Next time on City Arts and Lectures, photographer Richard Mizrach, one of today's most important voices in contemporary photography. He'll talk about 50 years of merging aesthetics and activism. His newest project, Cargo, features photographs of cargo ships at the Port of Oakland, California. That's next time on City Arts and Lectures on this public radio station.
City Arts and Lectures, Sunday afternoon at 4 on Radio Catskill.
Need more exercise? Why not join a swim team from the comfort of home? Fill a small bowl with water, power up your imagination, and get ready to do the crawl. I'm Meg Wolitzer. Don't miss this week's selected shorts for community and creativity with writer Miranda July and actor Parker Posey.
Selected shorts, Sunday night at 7 on Radio Catskill.
WJFF Jeffersonville, streaming online at wjffradio.org. This is Radio Catskill, local news, culture, and NPR.